Thank you, Charlene. Let's thank all of our speakers again. Okay, and now it is my pleasure to welcome our speaker for this evening, Bill W.
Thank you all. My name is Bill.
Hi, Bill!
So glad to be here. And I want to thank you all for the privilege to be able to speak. This is a huge thing for me. When I first started coming to Al-Anon, for the first year or so, I would often complain that my own personal experiences with alcohol, sorry, I'm going to read this because I wrote it, and it's a little distracting, but it's the way I think. I'm a writer, and I'm not an actor. So I'll try to read it as well. At any rate, I would often complain about my own personal experiences with alcohol, temporary hangovers, sleep problems, etc. And at some point, a gentleman whom I did not want to emulate told me that maybe I should check out AA and consider quitting drinking altogether, as he had. I did not take the invitation to the other room in the church nicely, and I told him that he could take his own problems and keep them to himself. I didn't want to be painted with that same brush. Until 2 years later, when I met a lady whose invitation to AA I enjoyed enough to quit myself. I may also have some interest in who those people were who were trading secrets with my new girlfriend. But the motivation that gets us to help is never as good as the reason why we stay. Something I've learned here a lot. I took a brief AA break from Al-Anon, but I never quit Al-Anon, and I kept going on occasion. AA slips are so much more obvious than Al-Anon slips. And it's kind of a blessing in that way, because I've probably slipped about 10 times since I stood up here in Al-Anon. But boy, would I know, and you all would know if I was slipping in AA. At any rate, this is another program. And I will start by just telling you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I've written what it was like and what's happened. What it's like now hasn't happened yet. So, the first part. I was born to a pretty much wet brain alcoholic dad who disappeared from me, my mother, my sister, as well as any relatives when I was about 3.5 years old for a good 17 years. I was told his primary motivation was professional drinking, but there may have even been alternative sexuality incompatible with my family of origin. I met him again in the last 10 years of his life. He got sober in the last 5 until he got lung cancer, and that killed him in the year 2000. My mother was often one sip away from drunk, but never showing it. When my father went bankrupt, she was thrown out of our Park Avenue apartment with no time to pack, taking my sister and me to live with her sister, a nurse who had become addicted to Seconal. That's a downer. And had become a stewardess for some 10 years or so, so that she could distribute stolen prescription pads, forged to her advantage. Eventually, my mother became a bookkeeper, as if her control of money could never elude us again. I should explain that my grandfather on her side was the prime Al-Anon in my family life. He lived with a woman who drank vermouth at breakfast and martinis throughout the day, until hospitalization for the last 10 years of her life, where she didn't even recognize my grandfather. My father's side was equally at the bar. My dad's father sold about a quarter of New York City. He had married a Russian woman who was beautiful, smoked cigars, and liked to go to fights. I didn't get to meet her. But I did meet his next wife, a nurse, after his stroke, on her fourth marriage to a wealthy older gentleman. It was her to whom I would write scripted letters about how hard school was because I couldn't afford books, clothes, or activities. She managed to take all of my grandfather's estate when he passed. So that's sort of the summary of my background in alcoholism, with another addition. My sister and I were both sexually abused by one of my mother's live-in boyfriends, a heavy drinker and pot smoker. My sister was able to eventually talk about it, but that caused so much stress in the family that I shut up about it until I was far out of the house and in college. I didn't know the exact words that were exchanged, but from my point of view, my sister didn't seem to be believed by my mother. After a break of a few months, my mother continued to live with and sleep with this man. Perhaps having heard that she could drink out of his driving cup of scotch when he collected her in his car at night, my sister's school asked her if she wanted to board full time. She moved out immediately and became a boarder at the boarding school she attended. I was refused acceptance at this school when I applied, and I'd like to blame everybody else for that. I attended my second choice in all boys high school. We can get to what it's like. Or what it was like. I met my dad a couple of years before my ex-wife. There was a 17-year absence there. I had actually been dating another woman, the first two-year love of mine. She was a bartender. So they understood each other pretty well and kept their professional distances. When I met my first wife, I had broken up with this girl, or she had me, and had graduated from college with a bachelor's degree in sculpture. Not too many job offers at my graduation. I had no job, no plan for spending my days or earning any money. And I assumed that I would move in with this lover in Philadelphia and work it out somehow. Trouble was, I had spent so much of my waking time on getting my thesis written, passed, and done, that I had avoided anything purposeful and had no clue how to begin. She had graduated a year before me, and the relationship had had a few problems which I had avoided looking at by concentrating on my schoolwork. The woman was provided by her career far more than a continued life with me ever promised. So I ended up having to go elsewhere. I toured Boston for a few weeks until all my savings ran out, and then I was rescued by my mother for a brief period until her boyfriend irritated me, and I stopped being okay with sleeping in the kitchen. I took off for the Appalachian Trail for a week or so when a friend finally sought me out at my mother's request. Don't remember the exact itinerary at this point. But at some point, I took a train to Providence, Rhode Island, to put up an art show that I had planned long before my graduation. And when I got to the nonprofit space, I completely fell apart in the director's office and could not open my eyes. I was locked in a room with homeless, drunks, and drug addicts who all seemed old friends with each other. When they moved me to a hospital, I was chained to a bed with screamers and wailers as unresponsive as I was, but them from drugs and alcohol, as well as perhaps a few psychological reasons. I had not drunk or used drugs in probably a year at this point. I was just on stress. After about 24 hours, I was finally moved to a psychiatric hospital, the Institute of Living. And there I got a powerful medication which seemed to stop me from thinking that the imagined words heard in my consciousness, in other people's voices, were intentionally sent to me, or that I had been given a rare skill to be able to hear others' silent thoughts. Yeah, not true. Turns out it was just my imagination, bored with me not talking to anyone, so it made stuff up to spend the time. Thanks. This was called a psychotic breakdown, as a matter of fact. But I spent time describing it because it is a logical outcome of an Al-Anon brain lacking any group feedback. And this is important. I assumed it was the most obvious case that I was reading minds rather than making stuff up. This may be the most important lesson in my life that continues to be learned with every new situation. And here it is. We need audience participation. That's not enough. I need you all. I need people. It's like Happy Days. Without audience noise, I didn't know when to laugh and when to take things philosophically. And the problem was, mostly, I made the mistake of doing the latter all the time. I would figure it out. Unfortunately, the shoe hasn't found its way all the way over to the other foot yet. But that may be part of my goal, to find everything a little harmlessly amusing, rather than instrumental towards revealing the hidden true nature of reality. Chime the bells. Move to the next section. What happened? So, I met my first wife after my breakdown, after finishing art school, with my degree in sculpture. She rescued me from the halfway house I had spent months in, as she had had her own adolescent breakdown earlier and had done some time in her own institution. I had met her briefly at college, as we had gone to the same school, and again later through relatives and friends that had brought us together. Who would like to help out a kid who had just had a breakdown? Except maybe someone who had just had their own breakdown. And here we all are. Like approves like. At any rate, she was the youngest of three from a wealthy family, and the last one left single. The pressure was on her to find a husband so that her parents could give twice as much money every year to each of their spawn, tax-free. After about 7 months, I stopped turning her down and finally asked her to marry me. We did, and to make a very long story short, got divorced 6 years later. Meanwhile, halfway through, we had a son. As my son grew, he developed autism, which became a big part of the package to enjoy with him. I was especially not ready for its demand on us, nor are many parents who find themselves in that situation. I also became an Al-Anon member. What particularly brought me to the rooms of Al-Anon was one weekend when my wife, my son, and I had retreated to our private island in Maine with my mother. I was not getting along with my wife, as she was getting to know her own manic depression with the help of many doctors. I was not getting along well with my son from time to time, as he was getting in touch with the defiance that would eventually become diagnosed as autism. My father was incoherently drunk over the telephone at all hours of the day, and my mother was almost as equally tipsy, at least unable to spend any time supervising my three-year-old son unassisted, as she had already done that once with me before. Thank you very much. About all I had for solace was the drink itself. And finally, recognizing the excuse alcohol had abundantly supplied my parents with, I was advised through friends that there was a forum that might help, in which I could address my issues without insisting others change. Al-Anon did not seem like it promised any solutions, but I did imagine the safety of a community within which I could gossip about the sins of others. Enough to maybe get past them and maybe even laugh a little. It's good to hear you too. Yeah. I confided in my friend Lisa, a wonderful spirit and an artist who somehow managed to raise four kids in a teepee in Vermont, where winter months could be half below zero temperature-wise. Lisa had made no secret that she had had enough experience with alcohol to be familiar with a few recovery programs, or else she wouldn't be here. Period. Although neither of us had jobs above making art, and she ate food stamps, church donations, and garden food while I used my family's billions at the co-op. It was still uncanny how much we had in common. Still, one difference was essential. She could ask for and receive help, whereas I had determined it was unnecessary for me because I had money. That was a hard lesson to learn, but I'm really glad I have. I'm super glad that I have. I need your help, and I'm so glad to have it at all costs. Lisa became my first sponsor, and on and off, she still gets consulted. I spoke with her yesterday, and she gave me the best advice when I told her about this talk. She told me to be an audience member. Stand up there and open your mouth, and the truth will come out of you. You won't remember a damn thing you said anyway, so just try to listen. Maybe you'll learn something. Meetings in Vermont were a little different than they are here, but it was amazing how much value I would glean from men with less fingers or teeth than I had ever seen on Working People. Or women who might spend all of their time at church teachers' conference bake sales, yet still needed an audience for the courageous admiration / insults to the drunks in their lives. What it is like now. Again, I can't thank you all in this room for being here. And particularly, I have this list now. I don't know exactly what it's like now. I have a list of things I could cover. And sort of it sounds like a list of achievements. I've got two stories. But in the past 14 years, I got to move from Vermont to New York City and then to LA. I got to go to graduate school. I got my thesis published into a book. I had 7 years at a really good job at a museum. And I've had 13 years with a woman that I love. I've got lots of pets. Can't even tell you how many. And I have a maintenance to a healthy person that my son can contact whenever he wants to. We haven't been in touch for the last couple of years, but he knows where I am. He called me when I had my motorcycle accident. And he knows where to reach me. And I love him. Apologies for my posture and for needing a cane, but I gotta tell you, this is pretty good shape that I'm in right now, considering what I've been through. Last year, today, I was coming out of a coma that I was in for 9 days. On July 22nd, I had this motorcycle accident in which I broke over a dozen bones and suffered a traumatic brain injury. I think we broke records for visitors in the hospital, mostly from this group. Thank you. I don't remember it. I don't remember my first month and a half, but I've heard stories. You guys are good at the anonymous thing. Let me just say that. The neurologist I now see told me this morning, looking at the MRI images I got from last week, he told me that he had seen MRIs of dead people who were hurt in the same way I had been and who showed the same amount of damage as I was showing. I welled up in his office. I couldn't talk. I'm awfully pleased to be here. And I'm too experienced to even pretend that it was mostly on my own steam. I have had a lot of help. I'm going to outline just one guy who I met at the hospital when I was coming out of my coma. I don't remember this guy's name. It was a hospital in Casa Colina, and it specialized in people who had brain injuries from auto accidents, from mostly. There were some Iraq soldiers. It was all kinds. But there was an older gentleman who was great at smiling. He would listen. He would listen to 17-year-old kids talk about how their girlfriend was obnoxious because she couldn't use the car cigarette ashtray and she had to use the window. And he would smile and listen and just nod and listen to them. He was the ideal audience member. He wasn't being judgmental. He wasn't telling them how he felt about their stuff. He was caring about being alive and that someone was talking and that he could hear. That was it. He had been through a horrible car accident, had a brain injury. Everyone else had too. He just couldn't believe that he was alive. And that was so great. That performance he did in the hospital is probably the greatest piece of art I have seen. In the last year, it's all I've thought about and it's all I've wanted to do. I want to be an audience member like that. I want to show people that I'm listening and that I'm thinking about it. He wasn't judgmental. He didn't say, that sounds like an asshole thing you just did. I would have looked for that. I would have been the candid camera, the backup smug person. This was not this guy. He was wide open and he was just happy to be there at all. And this is my new ambition. This is what I want to be. This is a higher form of art than the art I was trained in. This is a higher form of art than the criticism I was trained in. I wrote a book about this. This is life. This is being around other people and them wanting to be around you. And this is a great atmosphere and a great room where I have learned how to practice this. It was a tutorial in being an audience member that I received. I want to thank all of you for being an audience to me. And I want to thank my first sponsor who told me to be an audience and to listen to what I said. And the other people who are super huge in my life, my sponsor who has heard my fourth step. When I had my time earlier in Vermont in this program, we had sponsors, but we didn't do the blueprint for progress, 100 pages, and seriously work the steps in the way that I've learned in this group people do. And it is totally a different program for me this way. And I really appreciate even my sponsor's sponsor, who has his own sponsor. And it's a wonderful thing that we all know each other and know this lineage and are connected by this thing that has no value in money, but has a value in honesty and in life. And that's all I've prepared. I'm winging it totally from now. I don't know what to say. Didn't bring my iPad. My sponsor told me I could stand up here and just smile for an hour. And that he would stop you all from leaving. The power that we give ourselves is amazing. I just want to say I am so grateful for how this program has taken care of me and for the people who I met very early on and all over in this group. And I guess before I became part of an anonymous group, I really had this idea that I had to be a unique genius somewhere. The opposite of an audience member. That I needed to be a freak. An artist. A unique perspective entirely. And I'm not saying I don't want that. I do. It's something I still have, and it's something, Christ, you gave me a podium. Here I am. This is it. But to be able to actually hear and acknowledge and go to other meetings and find out what they're like and to find out the difference of a group of people and how they work together, and walk into these different rooms in different countries, in different states,
I've been to things in England. I've been to things in all over the United States. And to be home in a group this big was never anything I wanted and never anything I expected would happen. There was maybe 5 or 6 weeks of me testing the water to see if I could really stomach the Kool-Aid. You guys all drank in this place because it was clear you all were way too positive and optimistic about what this was actually about. Because this is more embarrassing than, you know, a chemical addiction to alcohol. This is a lifelong thing that you're going to do all the time. It's hard. It's the graduate program. It's higher lifelong learning. And I'm so glad that I feel at home here and that this is my place where I get a chance to find out what to do next and where to go and who I can ask for help. I have learned what my first sponsor had down. She knew who to call and how to say, I need help. I can't do it. Today, my wife pointed out to me that there's nothing wrong with my brain. It isn't wrong with my leg or any other bones that I broke, and that I still walk around on a cane, but I still don't tell people I have a brain injury and think that I can get away with being the way I am and lie to them or something and not tell them the big, horrible problem that I have. Fact is, I grew up with a lot of big, horrible problems. And I grew up being told the family culture is to not make a big deal out of it, to bury it, to not talk about it. And it's been really hard to change that habit. I'm not breaking it. I still have it. I still use it. But it's so joyful for me to laugh and to be here and to tell you all how I feel honestly and with truth. I don't think a lot of my family have that freedom. And it's something that I've only gotten because I've been able to come to a place with a whole bunch of people I don't know very well, but I trust because I've heard them. And thank you.